Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Yeah. So today I'm going to be talking about kind of understanding some quantum systems that we can control in various ways, and ways of kind of understanding the best ways of optimizing these systems so they can perform some task of interest that we want to do. So I'll be explaining kind of each of the parts of my title. What are these quantum systems? How can we make them more realistic in our simulations? And what does it mean to kind of over-parameterize them? How does that affect things? So these quantum systems, usually they're systems of particles. Maybe you have some spins, maybe like energy levels in an ion or something. And you can manipulate them with some external fields, maybe some magnetic fields or some lasers, things like that. And you'll evolve these systems over time. And hopefully at the end of this evolution, you'll get some maybe nice state out of that. Maybe you're trying to find a ground state of a Hamiltonian, or maybe you're trying to compute some operation or some calculation as part of a quantum algorithm. So you want to control these systems in such a way that we can achieve these tasks. And there are some things we can control, like these external fields, other things kind of like underlying couplings, or maybe noise in the system that we don't have as much control over. We want to see how those really affect things. So these systems really require really precise control of these parameters that we do have control over. So we need to really accurately find the optimal ones for our tasks of interest. Maybe in something like a nuclear magnetic resonance experiment, we'd be shining these magnetic pulses on our system over time and manipulate some nuclei that would be like spins or qubits in our system. And then there are many other examples too. We're really constrained by kind of experimental feasibility of what these parameters can be. You can't have kind of arbitrary magnetic fields or maybe arbitrary frequencies of a laser. So a lot of bounds on these parameters, maybe in magnitude. Maybe you have to perform kind of a uniform field across all your particles or your qubits. Maybe you have things like boundary conditions. I don't see how these things really affect our control of these systems. Because a lot of the work that's been done is really in these very ideal cases where we can kind of almost arbitrary parameters and pretty kind of ideal evolving systems. And we want to see really how these more realistic effects affect kind of what we can do with these systems and how capable they are. Now, a major thing is that they interact with their environment. So all these current kind of NISQ devices in quantum computing, they're very noisy. And there are a lot of different noise models that come up. We'll be looking at a few examples that relate to kind of effects on the probabilities in your density matrix. Maybe you have some dephasing, maybe you have some actual depolarization where your maybe pure state becomes more mixed or maximally mixed. Maybe you have some amplitude damping where your probability of your occupation changes based on how your system is interacting with its environment. So really we want to perform these useful tasks. We want to maybe prepare a certain state or perform some unitary operation or some other computation. So we're really trying to see, is this kind of hindered by these noise effects, and how does it affect what they're capable of? So to kind of formalize things a little more, we're going to model this evolution of what we can control as a quantum channel. And we'll have kind of a nice unitary evolution part that we can control, and then some noise part that will be kind of applied throughout our evolution. So you can think of our evolution being driven by a Hamiltonian with some set of generators. And these generators form some kind of ansatz of what our system can kind of express in our Hilbert space. So depending on the kind of span of these generators that's driving our evolution, we can reach certain parts of our Hilbert space. Maybe we can only reach a certain subspace, which is maybe okay, or constrained to some symmetries. But maybe we want to have kind of a universal system that could represent kind of arbitrary, maybe hard random states in our system or hard random operations. We need a kind of an adequate set of generators. And these generators are really constrained by what we can do in an experiment. Maybe you can only implement certain rotations or certain types of operations. So this will form kind of our basis of our evolution. Then usually you have to kind of trotterize your evolution into a number of time steps. So something we can control is our length of our evolution, or this depth of our evolution, M. And we'll see how this plays a role in kind of our ability of these systems to do certain things. I'll take for an example this NMR system, these nuclear magnetic resonance experiments, where you have some kind of constant fields like this ZZ coupling, which is actually very weak in NMR systems, and then a kind of a longitudinal Z field. then we do have some control over these transverse x and y fields. So we'll be trying to find kind of the optimal pulses or these theta x and theta y amplitudes over time that will yield some task of interest. So you could kind of represent this type of system as a quantum circuit where we have some local, maybe these x, y fields or these local operations or gates in the system. And we have some two-body gates. And then we'll assume that kind of after each time step in our system, we'll be applying some noise, which will affect kind of the system as a whole. So to actually model our noise, we'll be looking at a Krupp's operator formalism where our channel is represented with these cross operators. So an example of a dephasing noise, you'd have some probability of there being this dephasing part, which is represented with the crystal Pauli Z operator. And then you'll have some probability of there being no noise, should be something like probability 1 minus k. We want to see kind of how this amount of noise in our system, as well as things like the depth of our system, really affect things. And then ultimately, if we're modeling how maybe a state would evolve over our time steps, there'll be this kind of concatenation of channels, where we have at each time step kind of a unitary part, as well as this more Krauss part. And this Krauss part's really taking what maybe would be initially pure state into this mixed state. So if we're trying to prepare a pure state, then obviously this mixed state will not be pure. So we have to see if our kind of parameters in our unitary can kind of overcome this, still give us a state that's close to what we want. So really the thing that we can control is our depth of our evolution. And we really want to see how this affects these very constrained systems and our ability to optimize them and our ability to find a good evolution that will yield our state or our operation, given some amount of noise that we have. So we talked about optimization and what does that really involve? So we have to first kind of simulate these systems classically. And this is a hard problem because our system grows exponentially in size, like our number of qubits. You have to find kind of clever ways of simulating things for small enough systems that you can still handle. So I'm using some compilation techniques that help speed things up. But then not just simulating things, but we have to actually optimize our parameters. So we have to drive our parameters in the right direction to yield our optimal path. And we'll kind of represent this as this objective function, which will be relating maybe our target state or our target operator to our parameterized state. So in this case, maybe you're looking at some kind of trace fidelity, some trace overlap between our states. So we'll be using this objective function in kind of gradient-based methods where we drive our parameters with some form of the gradient of this objective. And it turns out that if you work out the form of the gradients in both the noisy case where we have these Krauss operators and just the ideal unitary evolution case, actually very similar forms. Actually, we'll see how that plays a role because it's actually driving with this gradient descent kind of your parameters in similar directions in both the noisy and the noiseless case. And this kind of tells you if it's kind of still learning something about the underlying unitary evolution. It's not just kind of accounting for the noise. There's also some nice other properties with these kind of inner product type objective functions between a state and its target, that the gradients actually have this nice kind of closed form where they're not just a totally other kind of operation that you may have to implement, but it'd be just kind of a finite difference, but it's actually exact, kind of a sum of these different objectives with these perturbed parameters. So a bit more about kind of optimization and learning. So we're really trying to understand not just to optimize things, but understand how it's actually learning these optimal parameters and how it reaches that as it traverses this objective landscape, which would be kind of the form of the surface of this objective function, which is very high dimensional when you have many parameters. But maybe in this 1D case, it's a little easier to visualize that you'll have some peaks and some valleys. And you're trying to find in the minimization case some lowest minimum, some global minimum. But you may run into issues, especially in these quantum settings, that you have issues like these local minima, like in the middle picture, where you think you're kind of at a minimum value, but you actually would have to head over this valley or over this peak much further to the right to get there. But then also because we're using these gradient descent methods, it relies on the fact that your gradient is non-zero and it's kind of pushing you in a direction towards your minimum. And especially in these quantum settings, you can have these plateaus that occur where there's a lot of regions where your gradient's actually zero. So you kind of have no information if you reach that point of where to go and how to reach your optimality. You have to get around this in various ways. But there are luckily these kind of interesting phenomena that seem to occur in a lot of conventional learning, like in machine learning and other more kind of classical optimization techniques. And we're trying to see if these effects are still really present in this quantum setting, especially in this more realistic setting. So one effect is this overparameterization, which is an effect that we'll see if you have kind of enough variable parameters in your system, you can maybe converge a lot quicker, maybe exponentially quickly, in the number of kind of optimization iterations to your goal, your optimal point, which is maybe very useful like numerically because you don't have to run your simulations and your optimization very long. But we'll see there are kind of other issues that may come up. One issue is that there's this effect known as lazy training, which is where your parameters in this kind of overparameterized regime may have to kind of barely change from their initial values, which is maybe useful, again, numerically, but may pose some kind of experimental constraints that maybe your tolerance on your fields or something that you can implement in a lab is only a certain value. And if you change your values, perturb them by just a small amount, then you could be way off from your target or your operation that you want to implement. So you have to kind of balance these effects of maybe converging quickly, but not having your parameters change adequately. And people have quantified some of this in the quantum setting, but again, kind of in a very ideal setting, that you can quantify kind of whether this overparameterized regime can be reached based on this span of these generators that you're driving your evolution. And their span will have some dimension g. And usually, if your depth of your evolution m is order g or maybe some function of g, then usually you can be in this overparameterized regime and you can converge really quickly. But we're really trying to see whether these effects are still occurring in these more constrained and realistic settings. So first, we looked at just adding in these constraints in our system. So in this case, we're looking at compiling a unitary operator with our system. And this will involve constraining our fields, both in amplitude as well as kind of sharing them uniformly across. So they'll be acting the same on all of our qubits. And we see in the unconstrained case that we only need maybe, I don't know, 50 or 100 time steps, and we can achieve like really good convergence in our optimization to pretty good infidelities. And in the constrained case, it's still kind of robust to this these constraints we in place, but we still have to evolve our system much longer, like order size of our system n. Yeah, so in this case, we're constraining the bounds on the parameter values, so they can only be within a certain range, kind of based on what you could do in an experiment. And then we're also assuming that we don't have kind of individual control over our qubits, so we're acting on these fields kind of uniformly across our system. And then we have some boundary conditions, like we can't kind of ramp up our fields too sharply at our initial times and our final times. So there's kind of some boundary conditions there of kind of how much our fields can jump around. So we see we can still kind of reach this nice exponential convergence, but we just have to evolve things for longer to kind of account for these constraints. And further kind of seeing whether this overparameterization phenomena occur in these constrained cases, we can again see if this kind of lazy training occurs. And we see it does actually occur in the bottom of the left, especially for deeper and deeper circuits, our change in our parameters is really small. It's like order 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 3. And this is definitely kind of this posing this more experimentally feasible question of whether if we're in this regime and we've converged to really good fidelities, we maybe our magnetic fields only have a tolerance of 10 to the minus 2 or something. And then we could be implementing accidentally kind of totally wrong operation. Then we can kind of quantify things a little more of whether we're actually in this overparameterized regime by looking at various metrics that kind of tell you kind of how expressive this ansatz is to capture kind of how much of your Hilbert space you can capture. And one of the such metrics is this quantum Fisher information, which you can derive from using this kind of trace fidelity. You can derive kind of a form of this Fisher information. it turns out that the rank of this fisher information tells you something about kind of how expressive your on-stop is. And we see as we get the deeper and deeper circuits and longer evolution, our rank kind of saturates at this value. And this value is the, turns out, the dimensionality of this, the algebra that we've chosen. And in the NMR case, it's a universal one, so it spans the whole Hilbert space. And it, our circuit kind of saturates at this value. So even though you have more and more parameters, you're only really kind of probing these 255 directions in this case. So that's kind of is one indication of that you're overparameterized, that you're not having to kind of search more and more directions saturated. And finally, not just adding constraints, but now we're going to see the effects of noise in our system. So the first effect would be kind of what fidelities we can get in our noisy system. So in this case, we're looking at preparing some states, and we're looking at this dephasing noise, which would be acting kind of individually on each qubit after each of our time steps. And we see for deeper and deeper circuits, for small amounts of noise, we get pretty good infidelities, maybe not quite as good as just the adding constraints. That's still pretty good. But as we increase our amount of noise, our state's becoming more and more mixed that it's preparing, and it's unable to kind of overcome that with our parameters. And our infidelities, kind of the best infidelities we can get are increasing our fidelities or decreasing. So we're really trying to understand what's actually being learned in this system as we're doing our optimization. Is it just kind of accounting for this noise and learning some mixed state that happens to be close to our pure state? Or is it learning the underlying kind of pure state evolution? So we kind of take our parameters that we found in this noisy setting, we insert them into this noiseless onset, so just to be a straight unitary evolution. We see how those fidelities from that system do compared to our target state. So these dashed lines on the left here are kind of indicating those fidelities when we kind of use our noisy parameters in our noiseless case. We see they actually do better than our noisy system. And it's actually learning something about the underlying unitary that's evolving our ideal system. It's not just kind of accounting for things and finding some totally other evolution. And then if we kind of invert this plot and look at the effect of our depth of our circuit and our amount of noise on our infidelities, like before in the constraint case, we're seeing as we have greater and greater depths, then we can get better and better fidelities. And that's just kind of a linear trend, that more depths is better fidelities. But here we see that our noise kind of accumulates. And eventually there's a point in a certain depth where we've had too much noise accumulate. And we can no longer kind of account for this with our more and more parameters that we have for deeper circuits. So our fidelities actually can no longer decrease, and they actually start increasing. Our fidelities decrease. So there's kind of some critical point where our depth of our circuit is kind of maximally overparameterized, and we're able to kind of maximally express our in this case, these hard random states. And then beyond that point, there's kind of too much noise in our system, and we're unable to account for it. And our best values we can get are getting worse. So this would be important for experiments that maybe you want to be kind of overparameterized in some sense, that you want to get good fidelities, but you don't want to be too much so that your noise is actually kind of deteriorated what you can actually do in your system. So we've learned that this overparameterized kind of phenomena is really robust to these constraints that we add. We just need kind of deeper circuits and longer evolution times. But this accumulation of noise effect is something we're still trying to understand of exactly the form of this. Maybe there'll be some critical M gamma depth at which you can get your best fidelities. We want to understand kind of the function of this M as a function of gamma, and kind of how we can relate this kind of expressivity with the amount of parameters in our circuit with the kind of noise that's accumulated in our system. So this is really offering these very kind of compromises between what's maybe useful numerically that we can converge really well and get really good fidelities versus what's really kind of experimentally feasible and what's useful to use. So we want to kind of further this analysis with using kind of directly looking at channel fidelities in our system and how that, if we see similar trends in those fidelities. We can also look at things like the entanglement resulting from these noisy channels and how that affects things. Like there's things like it's called a sudden death of entanglement, where your noise kind of induces a loss of entanglement as it kind of decays into your environment. We want to see whether these effects kind of can be related to this over-parameterized regime as well. Because we're really trying to find kind of what's the ability of these parameterized systems and these variational onsets to achieve these tasks. Yeah, that's what we're interested in.
Thank you, Matt. Do we have any questions?
So back on slide 8, I just wanted to understand the problem.
Yeah.
So you have the rank is the color. This is the rank of the Fisher information matrix. But then you have eigenvalues that are indexed above that rank. So whose eigenvalues are those?
Yeah, so this is just showing the eigenvalue magnitudes like as a proportion of the largest one. And for these smaller depth circuits, when you're actually less than the dimensionality of your Hilbert space, you have kind of this kind of just spread of eigenvalues.
Yeah.
And there's no clear like distinction of what the rank is. Whereas like once you kind of reach this overparameterized regime as around 200 or so, then you have this kind of plateau where like these are clearly the non-zero eigenvalues that are representing your rank, and then there's like a clear cutoff of what would be the non-zero ones or the zero ones. Does that?
I'm still wondering, like the eigenvalues are less than 10 to the minus 16. Is that just like how do we even get past 255 in the index?
Oh.
How do you get eigenvalue number 256 for a matrix that has rank 255?
Sorry, say that again.
I think I'm just misunderstanding, like, these eigenvalues are indexing the Fisher information matrix?
Yeah.
So then is it just numerical, like, stability where you have non-zero eigenvalues beyond 255?
For like these ones you need?
Yeah.
Yeah, like okay. you have to define some cutoff of what's zero within numerical precision.
Okay.
So in this more over-parameterized regime, it's much clearer that there's a clear kind of plateau of what the non-zero ones are.
Okay.
And then these ones you'd consider zero. But in this regime where you're not quite there yet and your rank isn't saturated yet, it's kind of a much more even spread of the eigenvalues.
Okay.
You do have to kind of choose a cutoff, but it seems that the type of cutoff we chose seems to correspond to both these.
Any other questions?
So, like, I've heard of this dynamical Lyapunov, but I'm not very familiar. Does it account for this sort of, like, it describes, like, the span of operations that you can achieve with your handling it?
Yeah.
Have any way to account for the, like, redundancy of those operators?
Yeah, kind of. So essentially, the dynamical algebra is formed from all possible kind of nested commutators of your generators, which you could kind of relate to if you have like a trotterization of a exponential of these generators. It'll form kind of a series of commutators. So it's kind of how expressive that is. And eventually, it'll be kind of closed in some sense, and it'll have some dimension. So if commutators or if generators commute, or if they maybe commute like after a few nestings, then they'll kind of cut off your dimensionality of your system. So they're like, in this case, the NMR one, it's universal, so its dimensionality is like 2 to the n or something like that. But there are some that are actually like polynomial, which is interesting. You kind of span a subspace that only grows or only has like a dimension that's polynomial in n. So those are interesting. So in that case, there's a lot of like symmetry that kind of restricts the span of these.
Thank you. Okay, let's thank the speaker one more time.